I'll turn to Nehemiah chapter 4, and I'm going to just skip through 4, 5, and 6 real quick and get talk about an overview of all of Nehemiah. As most of you know, we've been through this series, Thrive, and the series Thrive, we have been talking about how God has you not just so much to survive, but so much more than that. That sometimes as Christians, we get stuck in the rut, and we just go through life, and go through life, and go through life, and we begin to lose our joy, begin to lose our peace, begin to lose our fire for the Lord. And it's good every once in a while just to reach around and get yourself refired back up, right? Get rekindled to really know that God is for you, that God will be with you, that God can do extraordinary things through your life. And basically, that's the story of Nehemiah. Nehemiah was an average man, a normal man. He wasn't a priest, wasn't a prophet, he wasn't a pastor. He was an ordinary guy who loved people and loved God and did something about it. That's easy, right? I mean, think about it. He loved people, he loved God, and he did something about it. And of course, you know, Nehemiah was a cupbearer. He was in exile. The Jews had been scattered across the land, and Nehemiah fell to a place where he was inside the king's palace and living a comfortable life, living a good life. Had all the things he could ever want. In safety and security and sitting there, and he was the king's cupbearer, but he met his brother, saw his brother one day returning back to Jerusalem. He says, hey, how's Jerusalem doing? How's the family doing? How's the people of God doing? And his brother said, man, it's bad. The walls are broken down, the gates have been burned with fire, and literally the people of God are a reproach to God. Now, I say this all the time in my life, one of my goals in life is never bring reproach on the name of God. That's all. I hope my life will never bring reproach on the name of God. And Nehemiah was one of those guys, too, when he never wanted to bring reproach to the name of God, and the people of God should never want to bring reproach to the name of God. And so Nehemiah saw this, and he heard about it, and he imagined or saw his family, or knew of people that he knew from the past that their lives were shattered. Their place, their home place, the beacon of God's light had gone out. And it broke his heart. He was moved with compassion. He wanted to go do something about it. So he took a chance and he stepped out and told the king, hey, I want to go back. I want to help rebuild the land. I want to help rebuild my city of God. And so, you know, God granted him that request through the king. Said, sure, you can go and you can rebuild and you can do what you want to do. Matter of fact, I'm going to give you some stuff on the way you can take and go do it. And you know, he got there. He began to work. And he came up with a plan, he came up with a purpose, he began to work, and all of a sudden opposition came. We talked about it. If you're going to do anything for God, you got to get ready for opposition, right? Opposition came, and they tried to deceive him. They tried to hurt him. They tried to distract him. They tried to make him afraid. They tried everything they could. And Nehemiah stayed on task. He stayed focused. He kept on pursuing God's will for his life. And last week we talked about it. He was in the grind. You know what I mean? He was just grinding it out for God. And a lot of times we miss that as Christians because we want to go from one great victory to another great victory. But we know that's not usually the case. There's usually a grind time in between there, right? Like there's times where you're not going to really feel like serving God. You're not really going to be so full of happiness and joy and everything's going your way that you're just going to feel like everything's just happening so great and God's so good and he is so good. But there is times you're going to feel that grind. Like, man, I'm just doing the same things over and over and I'm not really seeing results. I'm not really seeing a breakthrough. I'm not really seeing something spectacular happening in my life. And so Nehemiah just grinded it out. He's told him, I'm not coming down off this wall. I'm going to keep building. I'm going to keep building. I'm going to keep battling. And so now we come to chapter 4 here, and we see him beginning to get a little victory. We see him begin to see a little light at the end of the tunnel. And in verse 19, he says to the, chapter 4, verse 19, he says, then I said to the nobles, the rulers, and the rest of the people, the work is great and extensive, and we are separated far from one another on the wall. But verse 20, wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. Isn't that amazing? I hear he's proclaiming to these people. He's saying, listen, I know the work is great. And I know it's extensive. And we are separated out far from one another. But when you hear this sound of the trumpet, I want you to rally there and all of us get together and all of us call the name of our God and he will fight for us. And you look down, verse 21, it says, so we labor in the work, and half the men held spears at daybreak until the stars appeared. At the same time, he also said to let the people, let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be on guard by night and working by and a working party by day. So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor men of the guard who followed me took our clothes off, except everyone who took them off for washing. He's talking about his working clothes, by the way, all right? Because wasn't talking about a real good party there, right? He was talking about not just not taking their clothes off, but taking their work clothes off, right? He was saying, we didn't take the work clothes off. We didn't even do it except for washing, except for when mom makes take a shower or a bath, right? So in other words, he's saying we were so busy doing the work of God, they barely had time to bathe. They barely had time to shower. They're putting it all in there, 100%. They were going at it. Verse chapter 5, we'll go back and talk about this later. It takes a little detour about them dealing with the sin that they had all still, even in the midst of their camp, as they were working for the Lord. They were charging interest to their brothers and sisters and really ripping them off, basically. Firstborn of the IRS, probably, something like that. But anyhow, they were ripping them off as they were going through this process. And so Nehemiah dealt with that a little bit. But I want you to get over to verse chapter 6. And I want you to look down in verse, starting in verse 9. For they all were trying to make us afraid, saying, their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done. So who are they? They, the enemies. They were trying to scare them, trying to make them fearful. And their tactic was, their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done. But look what Nehemiah says. Now, therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. See that? He says, God, here, come, strengthen my hands. I want you to strengthen my hands together. And if you go down to verse 15, it says, so the wall was finished on the 25th day, Elul, in 52 days. And it happened when all our enemies heard of it, and all the nations around us saw these things, that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. See that? See, Nehemiah did something extraordinary because he allowed God to work through his life. And for you and me, I've said this before, God takes ordinary people and does extraordinary things. I think a lot of times when we come to the Bible, we read it and we see it and we think of people like Moses, and we think of people like Abraham, we think of people like Nehemiah, and we think, man, they were just spectacular people, super talented people that only they could do those things. But let me tell you, God will use ordinary people to do extraordinary things. If you look around the room this morning, you probably look around and say, there's pretty ordinary people here this morning, right? Yeah. If you think about it, right? There might be a few of us a little extraordinary than others, but maybe in size. But anyhow, you got some others. By the way, if you see me grimace, I broke my toe yesterday. I'm pretty sure I know it broke it. I dropped the chair out of the back of the truck by it, to which both of my boys thought it was just hilarious that I was jumping around my toe and broke my grimace. It's because I stepped on my broken toe. But anyhow, if you think about it, of all the things that can happen in your life, the greatest thing you could ever do is allow God to work through your life. Think about that. Listen, you can make a lot of money. You can have a great career. You can have a great family. You can do a lot of great things. But if you never allow God to work through your life, you're missing it. You're missing what God has for your life. And God has a plan and a purpose for every life. And God takes ordinary people and does extraordinary things. And a lot of times I think we don't qualify, we're not smart enough, we're not good looking enough, we're not we don't have enough pizzazz or enough charisma for God to use. I can't speak, I can't teach, I don't have the things that it needs to do something spectacular. But let me tell you, when you read the Bible, you see God always uses ordinary people. And being ordinary is not an excuse for you using against God. You can't say, well, God, I'm not gifted. I'm not talented. You didn't give me this. You didn't give me this. You didn't give me that. No. The Bible says you are to surrender whatever you have to God and allow him to do something extraordinary in your life. And Nehemiah is a beautiful picture of that. And for me and for you, that's what you should have for your life. You should want to take your life and give it to the hands of God and say, do what you want with it. Do something extraordinary with it. And how does that happen in your life? Well, it begins, just like Nehemiah, it begins with compassion for people. The reason why we don't do what we should be doing for God is because we lose our compassion for people. We do. We get too self-centered. We get to focusing too much on ourselves that we don't look around and see people and break our hearts for people, have compassion for other people. If you think about it, most of us are so self-centered that we don't even see other people's problems. We don't see other people's issues. We don't want to get involved. And I'm afraid with the society we live in, the faceless society, right, or the social media society, the reason why we don't build relationships that matter is because we don't have to deal with other people's problems or issues in their life. Because we can just kind of know them on the fringe. We can kind of just shuffle them to the side. And when they hurt, we can say, oh, that's terrible. Or when they need help, we can say, yeah, that's great. Someone else can help them, right? Or someone else can help her. And our hearts are cold towards people. And us as Christians, we shouldn't be cold. We should have compassion for people. Let me tell you, when I went to the hospital this last week, I went to see Nick, who got in a car accident. And he was sitting there in the midst of that little waiting room there. And I was sitting there just thinking about all the things. I was praying for him and praying for his family and praying for this and that. And I just started looking around the room. And I began to look in the faces of the people that was just sitting there in that little waiting room there, waiting to see the doctor, waiting to see the nurses to get treatment. And I saw a little girl there was probably 6 or 7 years old. She was sick as a dog. I mean, she was throwing up. She had a fever. She was cold. Her mom was trying to comfort and care for her. Man, that just broke my heart. It broke my heart because I looked at someone that was sick, who needed help, and you could tell the mom was at the end of her rope. And I looked around and saw another guy there, and it was just, he was there, and his arm was all jacked up and had his thing all messed up. Every time he moved, he was crying, and he was moving around. I just thought, man, the pain and agony. He was sitting there by himself. Did anyone come to see him? Did anyone call him? Does anybody even care that he's here? You know, and I began to look around. I was like, God, this is the compassion that you're supposed to have for people. When you look at people's lives, not only physically, but spiritually. I mean, we as a church, well, we live in a community where people don't know Jesus. That people who don't have a relationship with God, with people who, when their world gets turned upside down, they have no one to talk to. They have no one to pray with. They have no one to come and care for them. They have no one to say, hey, God loves you, has a plan and a purpose for your life. And for us as a church, our hearts should break for people like that. For homes where their homes are being torn apart by divorce. Their homes are torn apart by sickness. Their homes are torn apart by troubles and trials. Our hearts should break for that. And just like for us in America, just like Nehemiah says here, listen, I know it's big and I know that it seems expansive and you can get overwhelmed. Where do I even start? Listen, you start with who God's put in your life. Listen, your heart should break for the people God has put in your life, and you should have a burden for the people that's even right there in your own home. Begin with your home. Begin with your family. Begin with your neighborhood. Begin with your community. Jesus was on the last week of his life. We're coming up on the Passion Week. And let me tell you, if I knew I was going to a cross and I knew people was going to crucify me, I knew people was going to turn on me, the last thing I was going to have would be compassion for them. But Jesus is coming down the mountain. He's not worried about the cross. And he's not worried about the pain of the nails. He's not worried about the separation from God. He's not worried about, you know what? He looked over Jerusalem, and it says he looked over Jerusalem and wept because they were like sheep without a shepherd. But he broke spiritually for them. He had compassion for them, and it moved him to do something for them and do something about it. And for us, we need to check our own hearts. Are we on cold? Do you really break for the person that calls you and says, hey, I just found out that this happened in my life. Do you say, oh, well, I'm still going to dinner tonight, and I still have my kids, I still have my family, I'm happy. Do we do that as a church? Do we do that as a church when someone comes in here and their life is wrecked and turned upside down, we just say, well, as long as we're doing good, we can really care less about this person, that person, this person, because everything, we're comfortable, we're fine, we're going to make it. No, we should not be like that. We should have compassion. And we should care for people. Our hearts should break for people. And if you don't have that, ask God to do that for you. Ask God to break your heart. Ask God to give you compassion. Ask God to turn you into something where you don't sit there and cry, or you don't sit there and laugh and joke, but you weep and mourn over our country and for people in your life. And like Nehemiah, get a burden. get a compassion for people. And not only that, but be surrendered to Him. We talked about this several weeks ago, that Nehemiah totally turned his life over to God. He was comfortable. He had everything he wanted. There was nothing for him to gain by going to Jerusalem. But yet he said, God, if you want me to go, I'm surrendered. I'm surrendered 100%. I'm turning it all to you. I'm placing it all in your hands. And Nehemiah took his comforts, his all the little things he had, he went to the king and he put it all on the line for God. He said, I'm putting it all on the line. Listen, for us, this is what we got to do. We got to turn and surrender it all to God. Listen, don't worry about your job. Don't worry about your comforts. Don't worry about all the things that you the luxuries of life. Got to put it all in. Say, God, you lead me, you guide me, you show me. Jesus told his disciples, he said, if any man comes after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. See that? He said, listen, you've got to give it all. I heard this statement a long time ago, I never forget it. Jesus is Lord of all, or he's not Lord at all. He's either Lord of all, or he's not Lord at all. And in your life, he's either Lord of all in your job, or he's not Lord at all in your job. He's either Lord of all of your family, or he's not Lord at all in your family. He's either Lord of all of your kids, or he's not Lord at all over your kids. He's either Lord of all for all that you have, or he's not Lord at all. And he tells us, make sure or be willing to surrender it all. Give it everything you have. I love the United States Marine commercial as that came out several years ago. It said, we don't accept applications, only commitments. We don't accept applications, only commitments. Think about that. God doesn't take applications. He only commitments. We don't go to God and say, God, if you let me live where I live now, if you bless me with a job with so much money, and you make it really easy in my life, and you give me help, and you take care of my kids, then I'll serve you. No, he doesn't do that. He says, you come to me and give me everything you have, and I'll fill in the blanks for you. I'll fill in the blanks. And we don't get to choose. We don't tell God what to do, but God tells us what to do. And he says, for time and time again, if you want to use grace by God, we can be willing to surrender everything to him. Put it all in his hands. Give it all to him. You know what I've learned in my life? He's going to get it one way or the other. He will. Listen, he's going to win. You know, when I talk to my kids all the time, me and Erin, they'll go to her and tell her about me. They'll come to me and tell me about her. But at the end of the day, when we come together, guess what's going to happen? They're going to lose every time, right? They're going to lose. They're going to learn they're not going to win. And whether they willingly want to do it, or they unwillingly want to do it, guess what? They're going to do it one way or the other. It's just how much do you really want to pay? What's the price you really want to pay? And for you and for me, if you think about it, Jonah. This Wednesday night, I was teaching in the kids' room about Jonah, and Jonah had a great life. Jonah was running. He was going through life, and God called him to go to Nineveh. And what did Jonah decide to do? Oh boy, he went the other way. He said, God, I'm not doing it. I ain't having no part of it. I don't want anything to do with it. And all of a sudden he goes out on the boat, and he's out there in the middle of the sea, and the great storm comes, and everything starts happening. The old fishermen look around and say, who's the one that's made God mad? Right? He looks around and is like, we know someone in here has made God mad. And he said, whoever it is, you're going overboard. And Jonah, the old backslidden Baptist, had to say, it's me. God told me to go, and I didn't go, and I'm running from God. They picked him up, threw him overboard, right? Think about this. Threw him overboard in the sea, and all of a sudden a big fish or a great fish comes up and swallows him. And I told the kids this week, I said, think about it. In the belly of a whale. Think about how nasty it is in the belly of a whale. Right? Dark, damp, cold, stinky fish, right? Don't even think about the gas part of it, right? I mean, just think about all the things that's in there. You're in the midst of the belly of that whale, and I'm sure Jonah was going, God, if you ever get me out of this, I will never, ever run from you again, right? God, if you just get me out of this jam, if you just get me out of the belly of this whale, and all of a sudden Jonah had given up all that he had, and the whale spit him up on the shore. And here's Jonah back to the same place that he could have been 3-4 weeks ago.
But God got it out of him, but it took a whale swallowing him up. Listen, don't let those things in our life come where it takes things away from us. Make sure you surrender to God and give it to him willingly, because he's going to get it one way or the other. And willing to surrender, having compassion for people, and persevere through opposition. Think about it. I counted 7 times here in Nehemiah. Actually, 9 times. There was 9 different ways the enemy and Satan tried to stop Nehemiah. Ridicule, plots of war, discouragement, fear, selfishness, compromise, slander, threats, intrigue. All those things. And that's what I was talking about this morning, because this is where so many people get stopped. This is where so many people begin a great work for God, but all of a sudden drop it and never follow through on it. Because they run into opposition. And you know, we can't be weak-willed, no spine, less backbone Christians. We're going to have times where people are going to come right up against you and you're going to have opposition. You're going to have troubles. You're going to have trials. And when you look to what Nehemiah went through, he went through opposition, and so many of us give in and shut it down and give up. Too many people are willing to give up too quick. And you get derailed because you face some sort of opposition. You get a little trouble. Someone makes in front of you. Or you get fear. You don't quite want to say that. You don't want to step out and do this. Nehemiah says, listen, all those things, he persevered through all of them. Think about through the Bible. Some of God's greatest servants. Think about Noah. Noah says, walking with God. And all of a sudden, God says, it's going to rain. It's going to flood. And Noah's like, are you kidding me? It's going to flood? And he goes, yeah, it's going to flood, and you're going to have to build a boat. Now we're talking about, I've been through this process of trying to get permits for our building and property here for a couple months. How many years did Noah go through a building project? Was it 120, I think? Was it around 100, at least 100 years, I know. 100 years! Building an ark and never saw a drop of rain. Think about that. How many times people went by and said, no, he's building a boat because he said it's going to rain. He's nuts. He's crazy, right? And I'm sure Noah many times threw his hammer, threw his nails, threw his wood. God, I ain't building this boat no more. Ain't no way. It ain't even had a lick of rain. There ain't even a cloud in the sky. I guarantee you, though, when that lightning struck the first time, oh, Noah was saying, oh, boy, thank God that I persevered. Thank God that I did what God called me to do. Why? He saved him and his whole family. Think about that. Think about old Abraham. You think about old Abraham. Abraham, his name was Abram, right? And his name, you know, names had significant meaning back in those days. And Abraham meant a father of Abram. It was his name before God changed to Abraham. Abram was his first name. It meant a father of many. Father of many. Well, how many kids do you have, Abram? 0. You mean you're the father of many, and God has promised you, and you have no kids at all? Yeah. Well, how old are you? 85. Right? Oh, Abram, he ain't got much of a chance, right? So then God changed his name to Abraham, right? And his name was changed from not to a father of many, but guess what? Father of a multitude. Oh, boy. I bet they had a real joke about that, right? Here's Noah. 99 years old, the father of a multitude. How many kids did he have? 0. Not one. Not one kid from the promise. And he had to persevere, but I guarantee you, once it happened, Abraham was glad that he persevered. Think about Moses. Moses was called to go against Pharaoh. He had called down all the plagues, and he was looking like the hero, man. Everything was going great. Moses was the man. Like, they were like, man, Moses is getting us out of here. He's called down these plagues, and Pharaoh has let us go, and they gathered up all their stuff. And Moses is like, yeah, and we're taking the treasury too, buddy. You know, and they packed up all the stuff, and they get going down this way, and they get out towards a little further outside of Egypt, and all of a sudden they hit into a great wall of the Red Sea. He looks across and he goes, hey, no way we're going across that. Well, we'll just turn around and go the other way. Turn around and look, and guess what? Pharaoh had changed it. And Pharaoh had mounted up chariots, and he was hovering down and coming down against them, about ready to kill all of the nation of Israel. And Moses stood at the Red Sea, and he looked, and he said, God. And all the people looked at Moses and said, has he brought us out here to die? Like, why would God bring us here to die? And old Moses Lincoln said, hey, God brought us here. He's going to do something. I don't know what he's going to do. And all of a sudden, Moses lifts up the staff, plants it in the Red Sea, and what happens? Red Sea parted. They walked across on dry ground. And it swallowed up all Pharaoh and all his people. Think about that. What if Moses would have quit? Moses, what if Moses would say, God, you're picking on me. God, you told me, you brought me out here, you've let me down, I'm not serving you anymore. He didn't persevere. He didn't persevere, he didn't do it. Think about it. All the way through the whole process, Jonah, Job, Peter with a denial of Christ, Paul with a thorn in the flesh, and ultimately Christ. He had the cross. Think about all the opposition, all the things that happened. And for us as Christians, we got to remember that it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be worth it. It's not going to be easy, but it'll be worth it. And the great promise we have, just like I said, we read John 16:33. Jesus says, these things I've spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. Not easy life. Not no sickness. Not no drama. Not no troubles. No, he says, in this world you will have tribulation. That's a great promise from God, right? You will have tribulation. But be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. That's the good news. The good news is not that you will not have opposition, but that you can overcome the opposition. That you win. And because Jesus won, we win. And when we look to Easter, think about it. The only hope that we have that the world doesn't have is that Jesus won. That he conquered the grave, he conquered death, and that because he won, we can win too. You can win in your marriage because Jesus won. You can win in the life of your kids because Jesus won. You can win at your career because Jesus won. We know God is in control. And he says, you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. Have joy. Have peace. Have security to know it's all going to be all right. Why? Because what God has done for you and what he's done for me. That we know Jesus is in control. He has overcome the world. You know what I like to do? Watch old football games. And most of you know I'm a Florida Gator fan. So I do have to watch old football games. So I can tell that back in the glory days. You know, so it hasn't been much I've been watching the last 10 years. But I love to watch these replays. And every once in a while I'll come across a replay of 2006 National Championship game. You guys remember that game? Remember it was against Ohio State. If you're any Ohio State fan, we need to pray for y'all. You pray for the Ohio State fans. But anyhow, it was against Ohio State. And if you remember I can remember watching it in live, right? It was so exciting. It was like, man, they finally made it back to the national championship game. They're going to go out there and going to kill Ohio State. Everything's going to be good. First kickoff goes off. Guy from Ohio State catches his name, Ted Ginn Jr. He takes it all the way back 99 yards for a touchdown. I just went in my room and closed the door. I'm like, they're sorry. They stink. I ain't never watching another game again. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life, right? I gave up. About 10, 15 minutes later, here screaming and hollering from the kids and go in there and look. Sure enough, Florida had scored, and they scored, and they scored, and they scored, and they scored. And at the end of the game, they went 41-14. I know you guys know all this like I know, right? They went 41-14. Everything's great. But I just remember how upset I was, how in despair I was, and how much I thought they were just going to lose that game, that they had no chance after that guy had taken back that run. But yet, when I watch it on replay now, I just sit there and kind of chuckle. And I watch it and I go, look at this. They think they won. And the guy celebrated so much he broke his own foot. Can you believe that? He broke his own foot celebrating. He couldn't play in the rest of the game, right? So as he didn't get to play in the rest of the game, all of a sudden Florida dominated. And so when I watch it now, I'm like, oh, that idiot. He thinks he's going to win. And you look at all the people in the crowd, they're holding hands. I'm like, why are they giving up on their team? We're going to win. Right? Everything's going to be great. Right? Everything's fine. Because I knew the outcome. I knew they were going to win. I knew it was going to be right. I knew everything was going to be okay. Listen, as Christians, that's the way we should face opposition. That's the way we should face troubles and trials in our life. Listen, you're going to have troubles, you're going to have trials, but we should have a peace. We should have a cheer and a joy in our heart that could never be taken away because we know everything's going to be all right. That Jesus has won. And because he's won, we're going to win. And we can face any opposition. We can face any trial. We can face any tribulation because he has overcome the world. And for you in your life, you can have joy in your marriage because Jesus can save your marriage. You can have joy and raise your kids because Jesus can save your kids. You can have joy in your life and your meaning and purpose because Jesus has overcome it. Oh, we can trust in Him. And even though we have opposition, even though it looks bad, we can have joy and peace and cheer in this world. Last one. If you're going to be used by God, you can have a mind to work. Listen, working for God is hard. Trust me, I know. I've been through it. I've been places. I go things. I know it's tough. I know it's hard. But listen, most people don't do much for God because it comes dressed in work clothes. Nehemiah was there. He had to rebuild the walls. And the Bible says that the people had a mind to work. Listen, your Christianity is not sit back and do nothing. Your Christianity says get out and do something. You've got to get out, have a mind to work. You've got to be willing to go across the street and talk to your neighbor. You've got to be willing to pay for somebody's meal, pull out a cash sometimes and say, I care for you, I love you, I'm thinking about you. You got to go down to the hospital and sit with someone. You got to pull out a pen and a paper and write someone a note. You got to go down and encourage someone when you don't feel like encouraging. You got to sit there and cry with someone when you don't feel like crying with them. You got to sit there and bear the burden, give, and be a part of them because you got to have a mind to work. And if you have a mind to work, you can be used by God. And if you don't have a mind to work, you'll never be used by God because He can't ever lead you anywhere. Most people say, I don't know what God wants me to do. Well, what are you doing for God? Nothing. Well, He's not going to do anything for you if you're not going to have a mind to work and do something. Listen, you can't. I heard this many years ago. It was a missionary that came. She was speaking. He said, you cannot steer a parked car just as God cannot steer a parked Christian. That's what she said. She said, if you're not busy doing something for God, how do you expect God to open any doors for your life? How do you expect God to use you in any such a way when you're put in park? When you're just parked, you're not doing anything. And people say, well, I don't know where to start. Start where you're at. Start right. God has opportunities for you to do right where you are. He'll never give you more opportunities if you don't do the opportunities He's giving you right now. If you're in park, He will never lead you. And listen, if you're in park this morning, put it down and drive. So I tell Tucker sometimes, put it in drive and stomp on the gas, right? Probably the wrong thing to say to a 15-year-old. But for those of you young, older, remember I always say, man, put it in first gear and drop the clutch. You ever heard that? Put it in first gear. Man, it's amazing how much stuff young people miss out on these days, right? Standard transmissions and, you know, how to read a clock with hands, how to first, I was helping them with their homework. They didn't know how to write. Or read cursive. Can you believe that? They don't even teach in the school anymore. They don't even teach cursive, writing cursive. Man, now, even after this week, they won't even know what Toys R Us is. Can you believe that? That was like a staple in my life. When I could go to Toys R Us, I could go pick something out from Toys R Us. And that was like something that was great, you know? Think about all the things they're missing out on these days. But think about it. We don't see these things. We don't do these things because we're in park. And you know what? Dr. Lindsay, Homer Lindsay, First Baptist Church Chapel pastor, one of his sayings, I told this to my dad this week, he says, pray as it all depends on God, and work as it all depends on you. Amen. Pray as it all depends on God, and work as it all depends on you. Listen, you can do all the praying you want, but if you never put your hands to the work, guess what? Nothing's ever going to be done. And God uses those who are willing workers, and He'll use you, He'll lead you, He'll guide you, and you start right where you are. Have a mind to work. And you say, what can I do? Well, lost people. There's kids that need help. There's special needs people and families that need help. There's homeless people that need help. There's veterans that need help. There's widows that need help. Think about widows. Think about cancer patients. Think about single parents. Think about all the things that we can be given and doing. And God's asking you, what are you doing for me? How are you advancing the kingdom? How are you having compassion for people? How are you working for me? How are you getting involved in me? And it doesn't have to be big, but it has to be what God has called you to do and who He's put in your life and try to overcome, persevere, and put your life on the line and let God do something extraordinary through you. That's the story of Nehemiah. An ordinary guy. He's just an ordinary guy that loved God, loved people, and did something about it. That's it. Now listen, for us as a church, if we love God, we love people, and we do something about it, guess what? He's going to bless us. He's going to give us the promise. He's going to say, I'll be with you till the end, and I'll be with you. You can have cheer. You can have joy. You can have peace. You can have all these things because you know you're right in the middle of the will of mine in your life. And that's what we got to pray for. That's what we got to be about. Let's pray together.